Hello and welcome back to episode 27 of the Boxing Social Podcast in association with Betfred, with me, your host, Rob Tebbutt. As always, before we get started, I'd just like to remind everybody to please follow, subscribe, smash that like button for more boxing content. Delighted to be joined for the first time, might I add, by unbeaten heavyweight prospect, the Romford Bull, Johnny Fisher. Johnny, first time I've ever met you. So this is a big moment for me. Hopefully it is for you too.
It is.
How are you, mate? Nice to see you.
I'm good, thanks, Rob. Thanks for inviting me down. Just a short trip from Romford and good to see you.
It's very good to see you too. Thanks very much for popping down a couple of days after you were last out in the ring. So let's start there before we move on and talk about some other bits and pieces. Looked like a pretty fun night that was down at the O2. Johnny, did you enjoy it?
The word I've been using is surreal because I've never experienced anything like that before in my life, especially it being my full fight as well. I just took it all in, soaked it all in, and it's a little hurdle, a little bit of experience that I've gained there quite early on, which is going to be important later down the line in my career.
Now, one of the first things that you said to me when you were coming in today is that you feel knackered today.
Yeah, I do. I feel shattered.
Just explain that a little bit.
I just think it's the come down from the adrenaline. I know it's only fought two rounds, but I think your body just, it goes into like war mode, like into a state of just like a readiness. And once it's all deflated down, I've been in bed for like 2 days, just chilling, doing nothing, had a bit of Chinese and done nothing, but I'm just shattered now, but in a good way, you know, like relaxed, my mind's relaxed.
Yeah, well, the hard work's done now. Well, for a little bit, it's done. Before we move on, let's talk about your Chinese. Anybody who knows you, and of course your dad, who we'll come on to talk about, knows that I think a Chinese meal is kind of like
it's a staple.
It's the staple of the Fisher family diet. We always love to hear that. So, what did you go for? What did you have?
What didn't we have? Is the right question to ask? But we had the house special chow mein, house special rice, salt and chili king prawns, kung po prawns, beef and black bean sauce, Singapore fried noodles, regular chow mein, sweet and sour chicken, sweet and sour pork. We had loads. There's more. Pancake rolls, salt and chili chicken, salt and pepper squid, just everything you can think of. You probably had it on the menu, but we worked through it all. There's a few of us, so we worked through it all.
So when it's like that, does everyone get their own plate? Is it all dished out onto the table? It's kind of a Fisher family free-for-all?
It's a free-for-all. So you've got to be quick in our house if you want to get a good bit of food. Good. That's why we order a lot, though, because we go back for seconds. But it's all dished up on the island, and then we all just take what we want. There's dishes that are specifically for me and my dad. Like, we have the salt and chili king prawns, the kung po prawns, the house special chow mains are ours. And then everyone else sort of falls into line around us.
Well, I haven't seen the size of you and your dad. I'm not surprised by that. That's probably where you got the hand speed from, just quickly diving in and getting the food while
there's
it's there.
There's that chicken ball there. Bosh.
There we go. Bosh. Yeah, let's talk about the fight. Have you gone back and watched it yet?
I've watched it back a few times. I watched it with my mum and dad, like, at home. I thought the first round, feeling out a little bit, just feeling out, obviously, the occasion as well. Fighting in front of them people, that's going to have an effect. And I thought I'd use my jab a little bit more. I still want to use it more, because when I do use that jab, it sets everything up. Everyone knows that. The jab sets everything up. But there's still more to come. Four fights in, to fight in a crowd like that was a new experience. I know I can box and be a lot more relaxed, but it's to be expected. When I get to 7, 8, 9 fights, hopefully I'll show a little bit more progression. But I'm happy with the performance and the finish was good. I know I've got good finishing instinct, so I'm happy with that.
Just touch upon that, because boxing in front of that atmosphere, I mean, like, we heard Eddie after the fight talk about, you know, it's the Ricky Hatton days, and obviously we've had, you know, not to the same level as Ricky Hatton, I'm sure you won't mind me saying, Dave Allen enjoying like a cult, you know, cult heavyweight everyday man.
Yeah.
What's it actually like being in the middle of that when you've done over 1,000 tickets, you've got everybody cheering your name, and you're only, you're 22 years old and you're 4-0?
Yeah, I think the special thing about that night was I was looking around in the crowd, walking into the ring, and when I was in the ring, and it's everyone I know. And that was a daunting part. I think it would have been different if it was people, like random people that I didn't know, like boxing fans, just general boxing fans. But because I know everyone who was in that crowd, a lot of them who was in there, 90% of it, it was just, that was the hard part, the challenge of it, because you've got a little bit of a personal sort of connection with the crowd. But you've got to block all of that out. I could hear my trainer well, Mark Tibbs, and just listen to him. Took his advice on board, hitting that jab to the body, keeping it a little bit longer, keeping the straight shots going. And when I saw my opportunity, I took it. But what a surreal experience for my full fight.
Yeah, you make a good point there. Sometimes I speak to fighters sometimes, and they say sometimes it's easier to box at sort of away from home when you don't know everybody in the crowd. But particularly yourself, you've turned up with all of those armies, you know, armies upon armies of people to come and watch you box. I can imagine that being a Yeah, surreal, I think, is probably the right word.
Yeah, and it wasn't... I've got a lot of support where I live, obviously, in Essex and Romford and Exeter Uni. I had a big cheer when I said Exeter Uni, which was great. Must have took about 400 people from Exeter. But I've had people from all over, like people from South London, people come down from Preston, people flown over from Ireland. So it's really nice to have that support from people all over the country and further afield as well. So it feels special at this early stage to have that sort of support, and I just hope I can keep people on board and keep building on the journey.
Well, before we we'll discuss Mark and we'll discuss kind of Exeter Uni in a bit, but let's go back to the origins of boxing, because as I understand it, obviously we know that you kind of went to uni and played rugby at uni, but you boxed, so you did start boxing. Yeah. Obviously, your dad as well, Big John, used to box.
He used to box. He had a few
at the Repton.
He had a couple of fights at the Repton. He boxed at the Lion, which is near here, or used to be near, I think. He only had four or five fights, so it wasn't nothing exceptional, but he knew how to hold his hands up. But for me, I boxed since I was young, in terms of being in the gyms. When I was six or seven, I was at Ongar ABC, went to Brentwood, five stars. So I've always been in the gyms from a young age, and it complemented all the other sports I was doing at school and my schoolwork and stuff. I had only had 10 fights altogether. I had six juniors I had two when I was 11, 12, then I had four from about 14 to 15 years old. Then I had a massive break because I went to sixth form, played a game of rugby. The first game of rugby I played, I broke my hand. What's your luck like? And a couple of years to sort all that out, really. And then I started boxing again at university. I had a couple of amateur fights there and just sort of progressed from there. But I wouldn't say I started boxing when I was 18, 19, because I've done it since I was young. But it was like I started afresh when I was 18, 19. I was a completely different person. I'd matured. And I think that was a brilliant thing that happened to me, really, having that break, because I had that reignited fire to go back.
Did you always kind of plan to go back, or was it something that just kind of happened organically?
It was just organically. I met one of my good friends, Zane. He was a big boxing fan. He's actually from Dagenham, near where I live, and he was down at Exeter Uni at the same time. I saw him and I said, oh, he's good on the pads, like really, like Floyd Mayweather style pads. And he knew a lot about boxing. And we just started hitting some pads and just kept doing a few sessions when we was back home as well. And we said, why don't we try and train for a fight? And we had one round knockout, and then we had another round one knockout, and Joe Joyce got in contact. I got in contact with him then, but it was all down to me having a good relationship with my mate Zane, and just fell into it. It's funny how things work out, and now I'm here and just going on the journey, continuing.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's journey into boxing, more often than not, I speak to a lot of fighters, and a lot of people's journeys are very, very different.
Yeah.
But you don't get too many people who do the university route. I mean, I've got a degree where you can go and do something without getting punched in the head.
Yeah.
And then decides, I mean, Joshua Buatsi is one that kind of sticks out from the domestic scene at the minute. Joe Joyce, of course, went to uni as well. Was there ever any kind of suggestion or ever any kind of temptation for you to maybe not get punched in the head for a living?
No, because I'm not aggressive in my mentality, but the way I am is quite an aggressive, like I'm heavy-handed. I've always loved rugby. I've loved sports where you get stuck in. Even when I played football, I was always a physical kind of guy, and boxing was just always something I loved from a young age. But as you said, there's quite a few who've come through, as you said, Joe Joyce, Joshua Buatsi, Fabio Wardley's another articulate guy. Mm-hmm. I don't think he went to uni, but I think it's good for boxing as well, because there is that perception. Even when I went to university, everyone loved the fact that I boxed at university, but there's a couple of people who were like, well, why are you doing that if you've got this chance to do a history degree and go into law and things like that? But it's good. We're challenging that perception, I think, a little bit. A lot of the articulate boxers coming through, that you don't have to be a brain dead guy to be a boxer. You can have other parts of your game as well.
Yeah, and it's certainly something that we are, as you mentioned there, we're seeing kind of more of recently with Joshua Buatsi, Joe Joyce, etc. Fabio Wardley, Fabio Wardley fairly well. Yeah. He didn't go to university. But anyway, talk to me about growing up. You mentioned before we got started here, obviously you mentioned your dad, but your brothers as well.
Yeah.
I'd imagine that's quite an active household to grow up in.
Yeah, it's always something going on in my house. I've got two younger brothers there. One's 18, William. The other one's Henry, 20. They both work in insurance now up the city, but they're sports people as well. Henry plays semi-professional football. My little sister, Hetty's into her sports as well. So there's always something going on in my house, and they both got dressed up and came to the boxing. William came in an all-beige three-piece suit, and everyone was calling him the Romford Eddie Hearn. It's going around, they're all chanting his name. And we're getting behind him. He's a character as well. So it's good to have people like that in your family who've got something about them as well.
Yeah, I can imagine it is a pretty lively house to be around.
It is. It's a double lively household in there.
You mentioned Joe Joyce beforehand. I actually read a story about you going out to spar Joe Joyce.
Yeah.
Didn't it cost you a first at uni?
It did. Well, I was on track for a first, so I can't ever say that I was guaranteed to get a first, but all my projections were I was on track to get a first. And I went to my faculty, my history faculty, and they said, look, I can't tell you not to do it or to do it, but all I can say is to be training out there, sparring, and then coming back and then doing a dissertation while you're out there is going to be obviously taxing, because you've got to spend most of your time reading. History is a lot of independent work. It is possible to do it away from your stuff in your classrooms and things like that, but you've got to devote a lot of time to it. And obviously, if I'm out there, I wouldn't be able to devote all my time to it. But I went and got my 2-1, which gave me access to all the different career paths I needed to after, because a lot of jobs and entry requirements are 2-1 and above. So I thought, why not take the chance? I've still got a 2-1. It's a great, solid grade. And I had the experience of a lifetime. At that point, it was just about the experience of going out to Las Vegas and training out there with someone like Joe Joyce, who's now a top 10 heavyweight. So that was a great decision for me, in my opinion.
How did that come about? How did Johnny Fisher from Essex at uni in Exeter end up sparring Joe Joyce in Las Vegas? How did that come about?
Well, I've started following Sam Jones on Instagram. I've followed him from right from the beginning, and I've always, who's this guy like making all this noise and making all these accusations and rubbing Bermaine Stavern up the wrong way, and then he getting lined up. And then I just said, he put something on his Instagram story once, like a question, anybody available for sparring? And I said, I only had one or two, I think, at university at that point, two fights. And I said, I'm raw, but I'll give it a go if you need any sparring. And Sam said, come down. And I went down to Surrey, and I think it was the Like to Box gym at the time, where Adam Booth was based. And listen, I was nowhere near the level of Joe Joyce, and I still am nowhere near the level of Joe Joyce, but I had my raw attributes of strength and power, and I went in for a few rounds, and I impressed Sam Jones, I impressed Booth, and they asked me back a couple more times. And then I came back to uni and carried on as normal, and they asked me back at Christmas time for a bit more sparring. And then before you know it, they was asking me to go to Vegas in February time. So I just took my chance, and obviously I was not refined at all then. If I'm raw now, think about how I was a couple of years ago. But they could see, Sam Jones had the vision to see the potential that I had, not just in terms of my support base, because he knew nothing about that then. All he knew was that I had strength, I had power, and I could punch. And I was durable, and I was tough, and I was rugged, and he took the chance on me. So I'll always be grateful to him for that.
What was that like, the first spar that you did with Joe Joyce? He's a tremendously successful amateur. Obviously, he's gone on to do some really good things as a professional. He's in position to do some really, really good things as a professional. You don't strike me as somebody who would be fazed really by anything. You seem to, you know, be quite matter-of-fact about things, take things in your own stride. But were there some nerves about getting in the ring with him the first time?
Oh, yeah,
big jugger.
Of course.
He's a big man.
He walked in the room and I thought, oh my God, this is an actual behemoth of a man, because I'm big. I'm not massive, but I'm a big guy, and he is just another level of big. But it doesn't faze me. I think nerves make you perform better. And I thought, right, if anything, it made me switch on more. And I only done 3 rounds with him. He was sparring someone else as well. I think it was Courtney Bennett, an England international guy who I sparred a few times as well. And I saw him get in with him, and I thought, Courtney's like, he boxes nice, very slick boxer, but I know that's not my style really. I can box like that. I've done it a lot in sparring, but I thought, I'm going to stick it on Joe and give him what for. That's my best way of impressing him and surviving, really. And I gave it to him for 3 rounds. At the end of it, I was blowing heavily, but it was enough to get me back. But yeah, I wasn't fazed. If anything, it motivated me more to do well when I saw the size of him.
Yeah, I can imagine it was. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Going out to Vegas, was that the first time you went to Vegas?
Yeah, I've never been in America before that, and it's just a surreal place to go. The UFC Performance Institute as well, that was amazing. Khabib was in there. I saw Gennady Golovkin there, Badu Jack. And you can imagine, as a uni student, going to see that, a boxing fan as well. It was just a surreal experience to go out there. Lorraine Richards was out with us as well. That was great. We made some good memories there, and bonded with Joe a little bit more, and we're good friends now as well.
Yeah, I've been sparring in Salas's gym. Vegas Fight Club.
Yeah, that was it. Salas was great as well to be around him. He's got good energy about him.
Really good
energy. He gels really well with Joe as well. You can tell Joe, because Joe doesn't just warm to anyone. When I first knew him, he was just not cold, but you have to warm up to him, and you have to. And I think that shows the genuine nature of Joe as well. He won't just be your friend because you're there. And then you can see when he's with Salas, he's got that that interest, and he's really passionate about what he does with him.
Yeah, I'm quite glad that they've kind of gone full circle.
Because obviously
he turned over and he had Salas when he Salas started over. And then, I mean, you trained with a lot of trainers. Obviously, Adam Booth when you were there. He was over with Abel Sanchez for a bit as well. Obviously, Steve took him under Salas.
During COVID,
When Salas couldn't make it over. But yeah, I quite like that. It's kind of like from the outside looking in, you see like Salas is a very kind of eccentric, very outgoing guy. And Joe from the outside is, you know, quite
laid back.
Laid back, quiet, reserved guy. And you put them together, and as you say, they complement each other quite nicely.
It works really well. And I think, as you said, it shows that they've worked together. They didn't finish on bad terms, and they've come full circle, and they've been able to come back and fit in at the right time. And they're in a great place now. As you said, Steve done a great job with him as well, obviously.
For the Dubois fight.
The Dubois fight. And Steve works well with him as well, because he's similar to Joe in a way, quite laid back as well. And that complemented, and that little team they've got there is excellent.
Which leads us on to your trainer, or your training team, shall we say now, because I don't want to upset Jimmy Tibbs. It's probably the last person you want to upset. Mark Tibbs, somebody that we know very well here on Boxing Social. Mark, obviously a really lovely guy, very knowledgeable trainer. How did that come about, you training with the Tibbses?
I knew who Mark Tibbs was, and Jimmy Tibbs was, obviously, from where I'm from, and it being a boxing fan as well, they're very highly regarded. But also, again, that was down to Sam Jones and SJM Boxing and Adam Morley. They said, look, it's a good fit. You're in Essex. The gym is 15, 20 minutes from where you live. And you see what Mark Tibbs done with Dillian White in terms of the improvements that he made with him. If I could get a 10% or 20% of that at the early stage of my career, then that's fantastic for me. And me and Mark have gelled really well. We're good mates. We're good friends. And to have the experience and knowledge of Jimmy Tibbs behind you as well. And the whole team, we've got assistant Steve Andrews from the beginning stage of my career. For my first two fights, he was my cornerman when Mark was away with Billy Joe. So to have him and Sonny Cannon on the team now as well, there's three or four different people there that I've really grown with, and they all compliment me. I'm in a fantastic place right now with my training team.
You mentioned the work that Mark did with Dillian White. I think it's widely kind of regarded as some of the better work that we've seen from a trainer and a fighter in the last 10 years. I think Dillian White improved massively under Mark Tibbs. What was the first thing that Mark said to you, or one of the first things that he wanted to work on with regards to your style?
He said, you're very, very eager, which is good, is a good thing, because you can bring it down. But he said, you're trying to impress with everything you do. That's my mentality with my school work, with everything I do. I'm trying to impress people. I'm trying to show that I care. And that's my way of showing that I'm committed. But with boxing, especially if you want to go 12 rounds, trying to impress with everything, do everything at 100 miles an hour, that's not going to get you very far, because by round four, round five, you're going to run out of steam. So what we're trying to do is just calm it down. And I think the progression of the fights has shown that a little bit. Still can be done even more. But the eagerness was something we wanted to not get out of me, and not reduce that aggressiveness, but control it, refine it. Refining is the word we've been using since the start. And it's still happening now. We're still trying to refine now.
How about Jimmy? I mean, you mentioned about Mark and Jimmy being very well known from where you're from. I think Jimmy's one of the most revered trainers in British boxing. Somebody who I always like to have. So I tell you, everybody has a Jimmy Tibbs story.
Yeah.
And my Jimmy Tibbs story was after Josh Taylor versus Ivan Baranchik. We were in Glasgow. And he'd worked the corner with Shane McGuigan and Josh Taylor. And a big fight kicked off in a kebab shop.
Oh, did it?
And Jimmy Tibbs looked like he was doing his laundry. He was stood there, and there was a big fight. So obviously us normal people were out of the way.
Yeah.
Jimmy Tibbs kept his place in the queue in the middle of all of this fight, and literally there was chairs going everywhere. It was unbelievable.
That man's been there, done it, seen it all.
He's seen some things.
Yeah, he has. So I don't think anything phases him. I was in that when I was even in the corner in the change room before the fight. Just sitting there so calm, so relaxed. You could just see the look on his face. He said, don't worry. Without talking to me, you can think of him saying, don't worry, John. I've been here. I've done it. Whatever's going to happen in that ring, I've seen it all before. Mm. So it doesn't matter. But it's just to have someone of that knowledge and that experience around you, you can feel it walking around in the gym. I remember once I was in sparring with Dubois when Dubois was in our camp, and I forgot my towel. And he was just looking at me, shocked, saying, you didn't bring a towel to sparring. I thought it felt like I was a school kid at school when he was telling me off, like a head teacher. And just like little old school things like that, always have a towel in your bag, don't forget anything, always bring a spare pair of gloves. He is the master, isn't he?
The thing is with Jimmy is Jimmy's quite methodical as well with what he does. I've seen him in the dressing rooms before big fights, and he likes his process. That's why he's so relaxed in there, because he has everything, all of his ducks in order, so to speak. So I can imagine you turning up without a without a towel. Yeah, was a blasphemy to him.
It was. But yeah, every time we train, he does my hands up. We've got a routine going. And I like working to routine as well. So it works really well. And you get to learn people's different habits as well. So Jimmy's habits, Mark's habits, Steve Andrews' habits, Sonny's habits. And as you go and progress, I've been with Mark just over a year now. But obviously, when he was being away, we've just started really working together since the Danny Whittaker fight. So we're still learning our ways and stuff, but we're bonding good and we're bonding quickly, which is great.
As well as you being in the gym as a young man, starting your career, you've also got Johnny Hedges in there as well. That must be good as well, having somebody who's young, experienced, you kind of take on the journey with you.
Exactly, yeah. Me and John get on really well in the gym. We've got young Tommy Fletcher, a big 6'7" cruiserweight coming through as well, who can punch like no one I've ever seen before as well. Harvey Holmes in the gym as well.
Of course,
we've got Charlie Duffield, a veteran of the game as well. So, as you said, John Edges, all of them boys, we've got a great little team building, and we've got the young ones, we've got people with a bit more experience as well. So we're all gelling really well together, and we're all one solid team.
Sounds it. Sam Jones. Now, I'm always really fascinated to speak to people about their experiences with Sam, because as you mentioned there, you know, not shy of a word or two, I think it's fair to say. He doesn't mind rubbing people up the wrong way if he feels like it's in his or indeed his fighter's best interest. Talk to me about the first time that you started working together. Obviously, you mentioned you reached out to him to get the Joe Joy sparring, but as far as actually working together and staying with him, what's your experience been like with Sam?
Well, it was last summer 2020, when we, because I came back from Vegas, and there was never really any mention of turning professional. It was just, what an experience for me to go on. We got back in the summer, and I put a video up on my Instagram of my little ring walk with my university mates, and I had about 300, 400 there. And Country Rose was playing, and he said, that's fantastic. And he's obviously put two and two together that I can fight a little bit, and I've got this support, and he's had the vision. Sam Jones is the one with the vision that let me have that night on Saturday night. I know it's very early in my career, but it shows the potential that I could have, and he's the one who spotted it even from that very, very early stage. And the good thing about Sam Jones is, you've seen it with Joe Joyce, you see it with all these other fighters, you see it with Florian Marquez. He puts his neck on the line for you, and he stands in front of you. He's emotionally invested with his fighters and with me, and what he's been doing with me with SJM. I know he's moved on to Pro Bellum now, but we're still good friends, and we always will be. He puts his neck on the line, and what more do you want? Your manager, he's a bit of a unique manager in a way, because they don't normally get in front of the camera like they did. And when he was my manager, he put everything on the line for me, and he's given me the opportunities I've got.
Eddie Hearn seemed happy with you.
Yeah, he did.
The past weekend. I think it might have something to do with the 1,400 tickets that you sold.
Maybe.
But anyway, must be great to have somebody like Eddie bat in your corner as well.
Yeah, really, really nice, really good. Obviously, Eddie's changed the game, really. I know the groundwork was laid by his dad, Barry Hearn, who was really friendly to me as well. And he's taken a bit of a liking, which is really nice of him as well. But Eddie's sort of changed the game a little bit, and to have his support, to be working with Matchroom, I'm very privileged and very honoured. And they gave me a chance as well, because when Sam and Adam Marley put it towards Matchroom that they've got a heavyweight from Romford, obviously Eddie likes that connection with Romford, but he's taken a chance on me as well. And it's paying off so far. And I've got to just keep working hard, and he'll keep giving me the opportunities, and it's up to me to take them.
We obviously just did a podcast in here with myself, Barry Jones and Declan Taylor, and we discussed your performance this past weekend. I won't say what we said, because you have to go back and watch it.
Yeah.
But one of the questions that came up was, you know, this massive support that you've got, and you know, you're four fights in and you're doing all of these tickets. Do you see that as, I mean, obviously it's a bonus, but as far as kind of your development in your career, having that behind you, because as you all know, and as people who are watching this will know, there's very talented fighters out there who can't move a ticket, who don't get the opportunities. But do you feel that that's going to help you now, help you get the right fights and kind of, you know, you don't have to rush it because you've already got that part of your career kind of blocked off kind of thing?
Oh, definitely. And as you said, there's people out there who've achieved a lot more than me as an amateur, and probably look more talented than me, or done and worked harder and done more things than what I've done. And they can't move a ticket like I can. So I'm just really lucky to be in the position I'm in. That doesn't mean I haven't worked hard and I've not got talent myself. But as you said, it just gives me that, not luxury, but that opportunity to develop at my own pace a little bit better. Gives me more opportunities. And as you said, from my experience, to fight my full fight in front of a crowd like that, that's all money in the bank, ready for when you do get to them area title fights or them title belts, if you get to that stage. But I'm lucky to be in the position I'm in, but that doesn't mean I don't have to pass the tests like everyone else when I get them.
Yeah, I can imagine that, you know, Mark and Jimmy Tibbs are not really, they're not really caring too much about how many tickets you do when they're working you on those circuits.
100%.
Talk to me about some of the other sparring experiences you've had. Fabio Wardley, I mentioned him. Yep. Obviously, he came into the podcast booth and we discussed kind of working with you. I think one of the surprising things, but it's not often that you speak to people who are in the same division or what have you, yeah, and kind of share sparring sessions, or, you know, obviously Fabio's slightly further along, yeah, in his career than you are at this point, but still the general feeling I've got from everybody who I've spoke to about sharing a ring with you is everybody wants you to do really well. Yeah. Everybody wants to bring you on and kind of, yeah, you know, as sparring should be, you shouldn't be in there beating seven bells out of each other, but, you know, trying to educate and bring people, exactly, along early on in their career. How beneficial is it to work with your Fabio Wardleys, your Joe Joyces? Have you sparred with Tyson?
I sparred Tyson.
Sparred,
yeah,
with Tyson. Yeah, I thought you had. I saw a picture. Yeah. How beneficial is it to have all of that? And it's not just the sparring them, but the type of sparring and, yeah, having that kind of feeling around it.
Oh, it's massive for me, especially from my lack of amateur background, only having 10 amateur fights. That my learning is going to be done sparring these people. So you get better, you spar with people better than you. If you play football, you play football with people better than you. You play rugby, you play rugby with people better than you. And someone like Fabio, who's them levels above me at the minute, really nice guy, really down to earth, but we've had a lot of spars together. We must have sparred over 10 times together, and we both take things away from it where we can both improve and both get better. And it's about different styles as well. Sparring Daniel Dubois was a big step forward for me, because that aggression, that physicality that he's got matches mine. And it makes me have to think about other ways of fighting as well. Tyson Fury, obviously, you can't get much better than sparring him. And he was such a down-to-earth man as well. As you said, people were happy to bring me on, which I'm really grateful for. One of the first person I ever sparred was Dave Hallen. And I sparred him just before the Lucas Brown fight. And I was, at that point, I hadn't even contacted Sam Jones. I was basically pumping a few weights in the gym, playing rugby once a week. And I'd come back on I think it was on a Friday, and I came back and sparred Dave Allen, and he was super fit. He was in a great shape, and I was just, I'd done six rounds. I never sparred six rounds before in my life, I don't think. And he belted me a little bit. I think he said it in one of his interviews, but I kept coming forward. Darren Barker was there. I kept just toughing it out, and that was great for my character building. So you need to have them points in sparring where you do have tough tests, and I think they develop your character, and you learn about yourself from that. Because I could have gone to that spar, being a uni student, and thought, this ain't for me, this boxing life. I can just go back and party on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and get my first in my degree, and have not an easy life, because it's not easy working up the city, but go and get a good job. But I want to be here. I want to do this. That's why I'm here. So them spars tell you a lot about your character more than anything. And I sparred other guys. Obviously, Joe Joyce has been a massive part of my development as well, and I've got to give a lot of thanks to him.
What part of the timeline was it that you sparred Tyson Fury?
Recently, sparred him just before he went out to America for the Wilder fight, the third one. Mm. And I was only doing a few rounds at the time with a few other sparring partners, but it's just a style that you can't replicate with anyone else. He's a bit unique. And once again, with that, like I said, when I sparred Joe Joyce for the first time, my best way of dealing with Tyson Fury, or trying to get through them rounds and trying to give a good account of myself, is to be aggressive and use my natural strengths. And Sugar Hill was impressed, Tyson was impressed, and Big John Fury was impressed with me, and they took a good liking to me, which was really nice to feel as well. But Tyson Fury is a different level to anything I've experienced before, and you know why he's the best in the world after sparring him.
Why is that? Break that down a little bit.
Aggression, but aggression from range as well, with looping shots that you can't see. So you've got to always be on your game. You can't just, if you shell up and think, oh, I'm going to be defensive, that's probably the worst thing to do against Tyson Fury, because you're a sitting duck. So your best way of doing it is being your natural self. And it's the aggression and the power and the strength that he has, being a 6'9" man as well. Because you expect someone to be strong who's probably a little bit more compact and dense, and like a 6'3", 6'4" frame, and someone who comes forward, maybe like Derek Chisora or someone like that. But he's got strength, but he's got size and reach and boxing IQ all at the same time. He's got a little bit of everything. And I think that's what makes him the best. But what sets him apart from most boxers on the planet, and I think you've got to give Wilder credit for this as well, is his mindset. And he doesn't give up, and he keeps going, and he keeps coming forward. He sparred 12 rounds with three or four different sparring partners. And not that he was feeding the pace, but that's going to be difficult for anyone who's sparring top prospects coming through. And he's just got that mental state. He just doesn't give up. You saw it in the first fight. You saw it in the third fight as well. And I think that's what sets him apart.
It's interesting that you'd say that, because kind of pre-Sugar Hill, I'd spoken to a lot of fighters who had sparred him. I know Lawrence Okolie did a lot of sparring, yeah, with him for the first Wilder fight. And everybody always, when I spoke to them, would talk about his movement, his speed, his reflexes and things like that. And it's kind of since the Sugar Hill switch, people yourself there, you, the first thing you talked about was the power, the aggression, the ability to punch
that
hard.
Style,
How hard does he hit and how physically strong is he compared to your Joe Joyce's and people like that? Because Joe, from the people who I've spoke to, everybody talks about Joe as the physically strongest they've been in the ring with. But obviously Tyson, with regards to punching power, 6'9" man, 19 stone sitting down on his shots. I can imagine he can dig a bit.
He can dig. He can dig. And that languid sort of looseness of, of him as well. It's a different, I wouldn't say he's the most powerful puncher I've been in with, but he can definitely punch. And if you've got a 19 and a half stone man punching you, you're going to feel it no matter what. If you've got a 16 stone man punching you, you're going to feel it. But with Joe Joyce, I think the development through him and the strength that he has, sparring him from the age of 18, 19, made me strong as well. And I'm comfortable. I feel I could get in with anyone and I'll be able to handle their strength because I feel really strong in myself in terms of the physicality. I think that's a lot to do with not just sparring Joe, but my rugby days as well. So when Tyson did want to tussle a little bit, I thought, this is my bread and butter. So I was able to impress a little bit there. But I can judge people's strength. Joe Joyce is really, really strong. Joe Joyce is probably the strongest physically out of them. But Tyson Fury, Tyson Fury wasn't far off. And think of all the other things that Tyson's got to his game as well.
You still, are you one of these boxers who still watches a lot of boxing? Do you watch every show? Do you watch a little bit if it kind of interests you?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I don't watch every single fight. I don't watch all the weight divisions. I like watching heavyweight boxing. I watch the big fights. I like watching some of the old fighters as well. Watch a little bit of Tommy Morrison, Lennox Lewis. But I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm glued to the telly all the time watching boxing, but I can appreciate, and every now and then I'll switch on a fight and just watch it. I watched Lennox Lewis, Vitaly Klitschko, when he cut his eye the other day. I watched Lennox Lewis, David Tua the other day as well. So it's not something I do frequently, but I wouldn't say I'm, because I speak to Joe Joyce, he hardly ever watches boxing. He's not a massive boxing fan, in all honesty. But I'd say I'm a little bit more than that in terms of what I do. I do like to watch a bit of boxing here and there.
Did you watch Wilder Fury 3? Did you watch it live or did you watch it the next day?
I watched it live. I was watching Smith Fowler up in Liverpool. And we all watched it in a room afterwards. It was great. It was really good. We had to wait up to ages. I didn't go on to like 4:30, didn't it?
Bad.
Yeah, should have just woke up at 5:00. It would have been a lot easier.
Yeah, I'm not one who sets an alarm because I'm one of those where if I go to sleep, that's it.
That's it.
I'll literally wake up and turn the alarm off. And
to sleep. So you're better off staying up.
Yeah, I'm getting a bit old for it now. I feel I've got too many miles on the clock.
It is one of them things. So you're probably better off just staying up. But I'm glad I did stay up and watch it because to watch that live, it's just like, it wasn't the most technically pleasing fight, but just all that action and just two people didn't want to give up. And credit to Deontay Wilder, because after that second fight, to have the mental strength to come back, and I think he was just getting from like round 5-6 onwards, or probably even before, he looked shattered. And then round 10, just before the bell, he just came out of nowhere with a big flurry. I was watching it back and I just thought, that takes mental strength because your body's gone at that point, it looked like. And he just, the mental strength to come out and do that. And he could have turned the table again, but he didn't. And then Fury got the job done.
When you're watching a fight like that and it's 5:30 in the morning and you kind of, you're looking at Tyson, somebody you sparred with, does that really get the juices going? I can imagine like a fighter jumping up and shadow boxing and having
it's like you just watched a Rocky film. You get up and you just, that's what inspires people to do. It doesn't just inspire boxers, but that sort of attitude that both of them showed in there inspires everyday people as well. That's why people love heavyweight world champions.
Yeah.
Because they've got something special about them.
And that's why boxing, like unlike other sports, is so far reaching to the not even just the non-boxing or the, you know, sometimes the non-sports fan, because everybody can kind of, I mean, I know they're doing the campaign at the minute with Tyson after he was knocked down in the first Wilder fight, so it's like the mental health side of things. Relate to things that, you know, fighters go through in boxing matches.
Well, boxing matches, to not sound too corny, is a bit of a metaphor for things that go through life, isn't it? So, as you said, people can relate to what they see in there.
What do you make of the current state of the heavyweight division? I think Tyson, it's fair to say, has kind of solidified himself as the number one. Alexander Usyk with a brilliant performance against Anthony Joshua a few weeks ago. How do you see the kind of the heavyweight leaderboard, so to speak, at the minute?
I think Fury, rightly at the top, I think he's the best one out there. But then below that, you've got five or six names that can all mix it together. I think Usyk's put himself up there now. He's got to be top two, top three. And he's surprised a lot of people, because if you see his fights against Chisora and I can't remember who the other heavyweight was.
Chaz Witherspoon.
Yeah. I think the physicality side of it, people would have questioned a bit, but he's shown against Joshua, whether Joshua introduced the right game plan or not, that he can handle that. Joyce is up there, Dillian White. There's a few names around there. It's wide open. You've got, and below that, you've got Parker, you've got Wallin, you've got people like that. So it is open, and it's interesting. If you think back to 2012, 2013, when Klitschko was still at the top, it wasn't as open as this.
No,
and
then, for sure.
That turning point, I think, was 2015 when Fury got the win over Klitschko, and it just sort of opened it up a little bit. We've been lucky the last few years. It's been an exciting division to be a part of.
Particularly over here as well. I mean, you mentioned there, you've got Fury, Joshua, Joyce,
Chisora,
White, Dubois.
You've got a great
good
mix.
Self, of course. You know, yeah. you've got people, you don't have to look very far.
And that's what
fight.
I'm saying. It's not just the top level, like them guys are all top level, but you've got your Fabio Wardleys, you've got your Nathan Gormans, you've got people at that level, you've got Dave Allens, you've got people just on the cusp of that Cash Ali, people like that. There's excitement all the way down, and you've got the prospects at the beginning like me, David Adelaide, Tommy Welch, them sort of guys coming through as well. So it's a good time to be a heavyweight, especially in Britain.
Certainly is. Do you allow yourself to look, like when you're watching, I mean, you'd be kind of crazy not to at least allow yourself a little dream and a look forward into the future, while of course, obviously, kind of...
Yeah.
Remaining focused on what you're doing now, but how much do you allow yourself to kind of to dream, as it were, and look far ahead?
Yeah, you do. You want to always visualize what you want to achieve, but I don't know how. I don't want to say right in my head this is the plan of what we're going to do, because nothing in life works like that, let alone boxing, because things change in boxing all the time. But if I could say in 18 months I've got some sort of title, or that's what I'm aiming for. But I know for me, my apprenticeship is happening now. It hasn't happened in the amateurs. So I've just got to, I have still got to have that attitude of fight by fight, see where we are then, see where we are here. But you can always dream, and I'd love to be a British champion one day. That would be an absolute unbelievable achievement. Whether I can get there or not is yet to be seen, but I'll give it my best and see if we can get there.
Kind of what we've spoken about there, you've got your Joyces, your Whites, obviously Fury and Joshua are kind of you know, significantly past domestic level now. I think Joyce has he still got the British, or has he vacated it? I don't know. He's obviously not going to defend it anymore.
He's above that.
I know Fabio Wardley's trying to slip him a few quid to get rid of it, but, so he can fight for it. But how far along the line do you think it will be? Do you think it'll be 18 months before you what, boxing at area level, or 18 months, 2 years before an English title, around that kind of level?
It's still hard to quantify at this stage, but I'd say 18 months, you want to be, another 10, 12 fights, then you start getting to the business end of it a little bit more, maybe English level, hopefully something like that. You might go a different route. You might go a more international route and try and get titles out there. But another 18 months, that sort of apprenticeship stage will be up, and you'll be ready to be thrown in with the mix a little bit more. That's what I'm hoping for.
Let's talk about your dad. I think it's fair to say that he's your biggest fan.
Yep.
Always been that way. Always been somebody who's been incredible. He strikes me as the type of father who's incredibly supportive. Always has been. Talk to me about your relationship with him over the years.
Yeah, definitely biggest supporter, along with my granddad as well. It was a huge part of me growing up. But being your biggest supporter doesn't mean you're always your biggest cheerleader.
Yeah, for sure.
My biggest critic as well, and in the social media, he always big me up and talk well for me. But if something goes wrong, or something doesn't go to plan, or something he doesn't agree with, he'll be the first one to say that he doesn't agree with it, and he'll give me constructive feedback, and I'll take that on board, because I know what he wants is the best for me, and we're very similar, and whatever he says, I'll take on board, and I might not agree with it at first, and then I might think about it for a couple of days and think, yeah, he's probably right. So it's important to have people like a good father figure in your life. Not everyone has one. I'm very lucky to have one in my life, because he wants what's best for you. He'll be your biggest supporter, but the most important thing is he'll let you know when you're going wrong as well.
Yeah, and it's always in boxing in general, but certainly in boxing, you get people, you know, you're somebody who's going to be very successful, and you're doing very well now. Yeah. So that can come with its own challenges.
Yeah.
Where you get a lot of backslappers, and you mentioned cheerleaders there. So it's good to, even if you, as you say, you don't necessarily always have to agree with what he's saying.
No.
You know it comes from the right
exactly.
place.
That's exactly right. And I've always sort of thought that, even from this early stage, I've got to keep my feet on the ground, and you've got to keep a small, tight circle of people that you trust. And there will be people that come along and want to be involved for the wrong reasons. And but there's also going to be genuine people that come along. But as long as you're aware of that, and you know in myself and Adam Morley, my manager as well for SJAM, he said, I know that you've got that in you, Johnny, because you don't get carried away or go away with the fairies. You keep yourself level-headed. And I think that's what's going to be my most valuable asset moving forward. I won't ever big myself up too much, and I'll know what it will take to get to the next level. And I think that's very important. And that's to do with the people that surround you, like your dad, like your friends, like your trainers, people that keep it real.
Your dad enjoying the increased spotlight that he's found himself in? He's become what? He's a TikTok celebrity. He's doing all right for himself, isn't he?
It's
he's got
crazy.
The biggest cheer in the place the other day.
It's crazy. We go on holiday, like it wasn't even back in August, we was in Cornwall and random people just coming up going, Bosh. Like he'd be eating his dinner. Big John, how you doing? And getting photos and stuff, and it is amazing how a man eating a bit of Chinese and saying Bosh at the end of it can make you a celebrity. But it has. He got the biggest cheer. Everywhere we go, we walk around, they love him. They love him. It's good to see, because it's something so simple.
It must be lovely as well for you to kind of have that. It seems like a really good time to be you at the minute, you know, like particularly on the back of like the last 18 months, 2 years and in boxing where fighters can't get a fight. And, you know, you're selling tickets, your dad's involved. Yeah. It's all, you know, you've got good people around you and certainly Mark and Jimmy Tibbs, you know, you've got good training.
Definitely.
Team. It seems like a real good time to be Johnny Fisher at the minute.
It's going well. It's going well. And I know nothing's always going to be plain sailing. And you've got to enjoy these times. I spoke to a lot of people, especially on my debut. I spoke to Richard Towers, actually, just before my debut. I was feeling tense before my debut. Mm. But I spoke to him on the day and he said, enjoy this time now. Enjoy the way up, because I got caught up in my career of worrying about what was coming next or this is where I've got to get to. But the fun part is the part when you're coming up and enjoying it, and you get so caught up in what's coming next that you've missed the moment that you're in now and enjoying all this selling tickets, fighting on a show in your full fight in front of 1,000 people. These will be the memories that you cherish and you wish, and you can't get them back. So just enjoy the journey as it happens.
Sort of what Eddie was saying after the fight at the weekend, you know, we're going to have a lot of fun over these next couple of years, which kind of seems accurate, like regardless of kind of where you go after those next couple of years. You'd think these next couple of years, there's going to be some good nights ahead.
Because after a couple of years, I'm still going to be a young heavyweight. I'm going to be 24. Mm. So I'm still a baby in the heavyweight division. So it's important that we don't rush. That doesn't mean we have easy fights all the way through. And I don't think, in honesty, I've taken an easy route so far. I've had a winning record guy and Danny Whittaker. Torero's given people good account of themselves. But I've got rid of these guys in good fashion. But that doesn't mean that I've got to rush and go through all these levels and get people, someone's going to give me a bigger test. I've got to enjoy it. And the right test will come at the right time. And I'll develop as I'm meant to develop. And after then 2 years, I'll be 24. I'll be that little bit more mature. But I'll still be young enough to not have to rush through the ranks.
What do you do away from boxing? Obviously, you've had a couple of days now to eat your Chineses and what
I was
going to
say, I just eat. That's all my hobbies are. No, but I've got a good group of mates as well. My mates who I hang around with, they're guys I met at school, and they keep everything real. Like they're similar to me in lots of ways, but they're not the most sportiest of lot. Like they're not like me in terms of boxing and rugby and playing like that. But they're into their sport. But they're just normal average guys in the sense that they go up the city, they work. They've all got great personalities and they're great people. And I think that keeps me grounded as well, because them guys, they'll take the mick out of me. They'll treat me like one of their own still. And it's brilliant, because that's what I want. That's what you want to be. You want to be with people who are genuine around you. And they're my biggest supporters as well. But they also keep it 100 and keep it as it should be. Just genuine, nice guy, and then people keep you grounded. So I'm just enjoying my life, hanging around with them, eating food, being with my brothers as well. They're like my mates as well. And spending time with my family, that's all I do. I don't go out drinking. I don't go out to clubs really. Like this next week or a couple of weeks, I go to the pubs a couple of times and see people. I go up the Rabbits a lot, where I go and have lunch. And I just have a very simple life, really.
Apart from the obvious, when you ask fighters what's your kind of bucket list or things you want to achieve, everybody will say, I mean, you said a British title. Everyone would like to become a world champion.
Yeah.
But are there any kind of little niche things that you'd like to tick off anywhere that you'd like to box at? Any in particular things you'd like to do?
It'd be great to box at Exeter, at the Chiefs ground. That'd be brilliant. I remember watching them play rugby there. I think I was thinking, imagine boxing here or doing something like that. That'd be good. I'd love to box at York Hall and sell it out, or the Royal Albert Hall. Jess Harding, I'm good friends good friends with. He said he used to box at the Albert Hall. He said it's like no experience you've ever
seen. It's a lovely place.
Yeah. I've been there and I watched a show, a Frank Warren show, and it's like a Coliseum feel to it. It'd be brilliant to box there.
Well, we'll see. I'm sure, well, with the way you've started your career and the support that you've garnered such a short space of time, I think the world is your oyster, Mr. Fisher.
I'll try my best. That's all you can keep doing. I say that a lot. I keep just saying, when people try and praise me up, I just say, I'll try my best, because I don't want to say to that answer, oh yeah, I'm doing great, I'm doing fantastic, because I know I'm doing well, but it's only going to go well as long as I keep my feet on the ground and keep pushing and keep thinking, right, what's the next challenge? What's the next test? What's the next thing I've got to achieve? So I think that's what my success has been built on so far, just taking every step as it comes, resetting and going again.
I think Jimmy Tibbs would give you a clip round here if you get too ahead of yourself.
He would, and I don't want that.
Definitely don't want that.
No.
Okay, well, Johnny Fisher, the first time that we've met, hopefully not going to be the last time, and I hope to do this again sometime soon. Congratulations on this past weekend, the win, and of course the Chinese, two absolutely brilliant things. Thanks very much for coming down today. A short notice, might I add, and appearing on the Boxing Social podcast. I'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks very much, mate. Really enjoyed it. Cheers.
Thank you very much.